I've been talking, so...
That's a lot of coughing. Yet another Hillary Clinton hacking scandal.
Same as it ever was.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair.
Nope, not scared.
And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs.
No stairs.
Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck.
From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, 93.7 FM in San Diego, 99.5 FM in Ridgecrest and China Lake, California. Up in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ on the Central Coast and 106.7 FM Queso in Cottage Grove. On 93 FM WLRI in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, 88.5 FM KAKU in Maui, WGRN 94.1 FM in Columbus, Ohio, 102.9 FM WLPP in Palinville, New York, and in Minneapolis, St. Paul on the great AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. And yep, coast to coast and around the globe, streaming on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR, Revolution 99, Detour Talk, Radio Monterey, and Radio Sputnik, blanketing planet Earth 5 days a week. You can run, but you can't hide from the Bradcast, even though you might like to. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Glad you're here with us today. We are live in the KPFK Pacifica Radio studios here, our Los Angeles flagship Pacifica Radio Network station. Glad to be now sitting here, and my thanks, by the way, to all of those who supported our recent fund drive here at KPFK. Thank you very much for that. Thanks as well to Angie Coiro of indeepradio.com for filling in for Desi and myself over the past couple of shows, so we were able to sneak in some much needed time off around the long Labor Day weekend. Thank you, Angie, for that. And to all of those ends, since I have been off the grid for a couple of days, I was thinking, and Des, I haven't told you about this yet, but how are you, Desi Doyen?
I'm okay, thanks.
I was thinking maybe we would do a reverse Bradcast today.
Okay, what does that mean?
Well, that would mean listeners, they will call in and tell me what the hell is going on for a change, and I will tell them why they're wrong about it.
Sounds like a plan.
That's the plan. Actually, it's the partial plan, because I do have some stuff I want to cover, but let's go ahead and try a reverse Bradcast. You can call and tell me, what did I miss over the holiday weekend and the past few days that I and the world need to know about? Call and let me know, and I will tell you why you are wrong. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Of course, I'll only tell you you're wrong if you are. If you're right, I'll tell you that first. But there are a couple of things I want to get to first from some follow-ups from last week, as well as from Angie's Bradcast coverage over the last day or two. First, some polling, since we are now past Labor Day and finally into the election season. Now is when I'm told it counts. The polls are changing. The polls are tightening up. This is something we've seen over the past couple of weeks. I've been trying to let people know about this. I think a lot of Democrats aren't paying that much attention, to be frank. I think they think that Hillary's going to walk away with this, and she might. But depending on who is doing the averaging, if you look at the aggregate polls, Hillary Clinton is now just up by 3, according to the New York Times Upshot. An aggregate, the polling average. New York Times sees Clinton up just by 3 points nationally, just over 3 points, according to Real Clear Politics polling average. HuffPo has their own HuffPollster average. They have her up by 5. As the HuffPollster team puts it, not a single poll included in HuffPost's average has had Trump ahead since July, or at least that is the case until now. A new CNN poll that many are freaking out about came out yesterday, puts Hillary Clinton up by 3 points among registered voters in a four-way race. That's including the Libertarian and Green candidates, but among likely voters. And this is what you're going to see. The polls are going to change now from registered voters, which is what we've been using now for months and months, registered voters, people who could vote if they wanted to vote. Now we're moving from registered voters to likely voters. And each polling outlet has a different way they go about determining who is a likely voter, who is, not just registered, but who is actually going to show up and vote this year. And while Clinton was up by 3 points in CNN's new poll yesterday among registered voters, among likely voters, she is down by 1 point. Donald Trump is now leading nationally, at least in this CNN poll, and it's only one so far. We'll see if more come out like it, but CNN now finds Trump leading Hillary Clinton by 2 points, 45-43. Now, a new LA Times poll that also came out, I believe this was yesterday as well, an LA Times USC national poll of, again, likely voters, finds a tie between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. That in a two-way matchup that doesn't include the Libertarian and Green Party candidates. So CNN has Trump up nationally by 2 points. LA Times has a tie between Clinton and Trump. And with those polls, Clinton's lead in the Real Clear Politics average fell to 3.3 percentage points in its average of national polls. That from 6.3 points just a few days earlier on August 27. So it plummeted with some of these new polls coming out showing the race is tightening. A 538 forecast has now boosted Donald Trump's odds of victory in November to 1 in 3. 1 in 3, yeah. Ken Goldstein, a professor of politics at the University of San Francisco, he's a polling analyst for Bloomberg Politics. He said, at the end of the day, this race remains Hillary Clinton's to lose. That said, she may be capable of that, according to Goldstein. Now, remember, presidential elections, they are not national elections. So we see these national numbers and they may be a good indication of what could happen in the swing states. But we don't have national elections. We have 50 state by state elections. And on that front, Hillary Clinton still holds a lead in the Electoral College in pretty much all of these polls across the board. But a massive batch of Washington Post Survey Monkey polls of state polls, a big study of states, voters in all 50 states, released on Tuesday, shows that Donald Trump has now edged ahead of Hillary Clinton in Ohio. So there's that. On the other hand, the same survey also shows Hillary Clinton with a 1 point lead in the great state of Texas. Really? In Texas? Well, yeah, according to Washington Post Survey Monkey, this one survey, and it's a big survey of all 50 states. A new Arizona Republic Morrison Cronkite Institute poll finds Hillary Clinton leading Donald Trump by 2 points in Arizona. This is among likely voters in a four-person race in Arizona. In all, Clinton still holds a fairly commanding advantage in the Electoral College and in most of the polling, at least for now, even as the polling methodologies begin to move from registered voters to likely voters, and as the race continues to tighten up at the beginning of this final stretch with just 2 months now to go until Election Day. And I can't wait until it's done. Bloomberg notes of the 14 most competitive states, the states considered most likely as swing states, of the 14 most competitive states, the latest polling averages tracked by Real Clear Politics as of now find Donald Trump leading only in Iowa and the Republican-leaning states of Arizona, Georgia, and Missouri, in each case by 3 or fewer points. So those could be close, at least if these numbers hold. But they do seem to be swinging the other way. Clinton, on the other hand, is up by 5 points or less, according to the Real Clear Politics polling averages. 5 points or less in Florida, Virginia, Ohio, Nevada, and North Carolina. She has a larger cushion in Colorado, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, and New Hampshire, according to that average. Right now, Hillary Clinton, yes, she is still out in front. Yes, she still has a lead. Yes, she's still leading in the Electoral College. But everything is tightening, and I would argue that every vote counts, or at least it should. Speaking of Texas, this is kind of amazing. The Dallas Morning News. Desi Doyen, your old hometown of Dallas, is actually endorsing Hillary Clinton for president. This they have not done since World War II. They have not endorsed a Democratic presidential candidate. They lead their editorial today by saying there is only one serious candidate on the presidential ballot in November. We recommend Hillary Clinton. We don't come to this decision easily. This newspaper has not recommended a Democrat for the nation's highest office since before World War II. That's more than 75 years and nearly 20 elections. They say that the party's over-reliance, they're talking about the Democratic Party, on government and regulation to remedy the country's ills is at odds with our belief in private sector ingenuity and innovation. Our values are more about individual liberty, free markets, and a strong national defense. They say we've been critical of Clinton's handling of certain issues in the past, but unlike Donald Trump, they write, Hillary Clinton has experience in actual governance, a record of service, and a willingness to delve into real policy. Resume versus resume, judgment versus judgment. This election, they write, is no contest. They go on to talk about Trump's shortcomings. They go on to talk about Hillary Clinton's shortcomings. And say that, however, they pale in comparison to the litany of evils some opponents accuse her of. Treason? Murder? Her being cleared of crimes by investigation after investigation has no effect on these political hyenas. They refuse to see anything but conspiracies and cover-ups. The Dallas Morning News writes, Clinton has made mistakes and displayed bad judgment, but her errors are plainly in a different universe than her opponents. So that's the Dallas Morning News endorsing the Democrat. Don't know if that actually redounds to Hillary Clinton's benefit or not nationally.
Well, in Texas, God knows what that would actually effect would have. I mean, the Dallas Morning News is notoriously conservative as far as the editorial board goes. Yep. They have wonderful journalists there who do great and objective work. But boy, the editorial board, forget it.
Oh, yeah. Forget it. And yet they're still going for the Democrat. So I think that could have a difference in Texas. In Texas, where this a new Washington Post Survey Monkey poll was it that one? Which one said has Donald Trump up by just one? If I have my numbers correctly, I lost track of it here, but it shows a very tight race in the state of Texas. So that could make a difference there. It could make Democrats around the country who are concerned about Hillary be less interested in her. They cite a lot of the Republicans who have come on board for Hillary Clinton, people from the George W. Bush administration, back to the Ronald Reagan administration. That may or may not go over well with some Democrats. In any event, that's where we are. Every vote should count, and it might count. But here's an example of votes counting and not counting. Remember Helen Purcell? She was the longtime Republican county recorder of Maricopa County. That's Phoenix, Arizona. She was on the ballot last week when Arizona and Florida held state primary elections just last week. She's Maricopa's chief election official. She's responsible for the decision to move Phoenix from precinct-based voting earlier this year in the primary and the presidential primary back in March. She moved the Phoenix from precinct-based voting to voting center-based voting, where voters can vote at any location rather than having to show up at their own precinct. In the bargain, she changed the number of voting locations from more than 200 in Phoenix back in 2012 down to just 60 during this year's presidential primary. And in the bargain, voting locations in Hispanic communities were shut down. There were long lines, up to 5 hours in some places for those primaries back in March. Many Bernie Sanders supporters at the time claimed that there was evidence of the DNC and Hillary somehow stealing Arizona. But Purcell, who has been Maricopa's county recorder since 1988, almost 30 years, Purcell is a Republican. And both the Clinton and Sanders camp filed suit against those poll closures and the way that primary was run back in March of this year. In any event, Helen Purcell herself was on the ballot last week in those state primaries in Arizona. She's running for re-election. This would be her eighth term. And on election night last week, as we reported, there was some apparent good news for those who objected to the way that Helen Purcell ran the primaries in Maricopa this year. On election night, when they were counting, they called it 99% of the precincts reporting on election night. According to Maricopa's own election site, which, remember, is run by Purcell, we reported the next day after that election that she was said to be losing to her Republican primary challenger, Aaron Flannery, by just 339 votes out of some 26,000 votes that had been counted at that time. A difference of 0.14%. Helen Purcell, the controversial Republican county recorder, looked like she was set to go down in to be turfed out in the primary by a challenger by the name of Aaron Flannery. Incredibly close race, 339 votes, and the percentages were Aaron Flannery 50.07 to Helen Purcell 49.93. Very close, a difference of 0.14%. So that was with 99% of the precincts reported. As of Wednesday night, however, Purcell had taken the lead over Flannery, had taken it back with once 100% of precincts were reporting, and as the tally of provisional ballots had begun, as of Thursday, the results had flipped. Now, Helen Purcell, according to her own website and according to the computers that tally the paper ballots in Maricopa County, Helen Purcell was now leading by 374 votes instead of losing by 339. But the percentages were exactly the same, except flipped. She had 50.07%. Aaron Flannery had 49.93%. Exact same percentages, but the numbers had flipped. Make of that what you will. As of today, it is the same 0.14% difference, but there are now just 185 votes difference out of more than, how many were counted here? More than 30,000, I'm sorry, 300,000, more than 300,000 votes cast. The percentages have stayed exactly the same, but now there's a 185 vote difference. Helen Purcell looks like she will now have beat Aaron Flannery in the Republican primary, but it is a reminder of how every single vote counts. And the reason I say that it looks like she may now beat him is because Aaron Flannery has said he's not going to challenge this race. He's not going to ask for a hand count. Why he wouldn't do that with 185 votes difference out of 300,000 votes counted, I can't tell you. But they have paper ballots that are hand countable in Maricopa County, but it looks like they are not going to count them. He says that he had watched some of the tallying, that everything seems to him to be okay, so he's not going to worry about it. And besides the money that it would take to carry out a challenge to the election, he can't afford. He doesn't have. Once again, underscoring why we need to be able to oversee our own counts. We need to be able to oversee them on election night. Having paper ballots that, oh, maybe we can count by hand later is not enough. Because I can't tell you how many times I've seen this over and over and over again. There's a close race, but the challenger simply doesn't have the money. You know, they've spent all the money on their race. They don't have the money to go out there and start, spending all kinds of money on a challenge that they may or may not win and start raising money all over again, and they have to do it very quickly. It's easier for him to say, as Aaron Flannery has, oh, well, you know what? I'll worry about it next time. I'm going to run again in 2020. We've taught her her lesson this time. Hopefully she saw how close she came to losing. And, therefore that won't happen again. But who knows? Who knows if the results were correct? We don't know. They have paper ballots, but they count them by computers. And this is what we are stuck with. Now, she will be facing, Helen Purcell will be facing a Democratic challenger in Maricopa on November 8th. So there is still another chance, if you wish, voters in Phoenix, to take down Helen Purcell. But that is where we are now. Okay, we've got some other voting news, but I'm going to skip that for now. We'll do that on tomorrow's program because I want to get to the latest on the Dakota Access Pipeline. And we've been covering this story pretty early on, and there were some kind of remarkable developments over the weekend, over the holiday weekend. Angie Coiro, sitting in for us, covered some of what went on over the weekend, and she played some of Amy Goodman's rather remarkable coverage from Democracy Now. She was up there over the weekend when basically they moved in with bulldozers and security dogs and started breaking ground on an area of the Dakota Access pipeline outside the Standing Rock Sioux tribe where they had been protesting. Now, I think they're up to about 8,000 protesters out there, Des. Tribes from all over the country have come down.
It's about 100 tribes now. More than 100 tribes have joined them or voiced support for the Standing Rock Sioux. And the numbers at the camp vary. I think it's been as high as 4,000 at one point.
And this happened on Saturday, and there was a panic, and people were getting hurt. Where's my story on this? Yeah, let's see. This was kind of amazing. People were going out of these crew bulldozers came from 20 miles out of their way to demolish what had been sacred sites along the pipeline's pathway in North Dakota. This, according to Tim Mentz, a former historic preservation officer for the Standing Rock Sioux tribe. And the Standing Rock Sioux had identified these sacred sites just the day before on Friday, and then in come the bulldozers on Saturday. Now, we spoke with the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe last week. Was it last week?
Yes.
It feels a long time ago. But it was last week. And here's just some of his comments about why they are trying to stop this pipeline. What's that?
His name is Dave Archambeau.
What did I say?
You didn't say his
name. Oh, I was going to.
Okay.
Dave Archambeau, the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe, why they are protesting, what their concerns are, and they have to do with both environmental concerns and the concerns of, you know, of their tribe and of their sacred lands.
Our treaty lands, we have a treaty in 1851, is where this pipeline is going to cut through. We know there are sacred sites there, and we were never given an opportunity up front to have the pipeline avoid those things. There were two routes that were chosen. Mm-hmm. One was to avoid our ancestral lands, our treaty lands, and go north of Bismarck. Bismarck, North Dakota, the state capital of Bismarck. Mm-hmm. That route was not chosen because someone from the city said we have fresh drinking water. When they chose our route, we raise the same concerns. We need fresh drinking water. We have water intakes. They tell us, there's a very little chance that this would ever breach. So I said, why don't you put it north of Bismarck then? Mm-hmm. All because there's a population of people there. There's a greater impact. So what we look at are not only our ancestral sites, but we're looking at the future generations. There's the environmental concerns, our future generation, our ancestral burial sites. You ask what the issue is, mm-hmm. there's too many to list. We would ask that before a project scoping takes place, and if they're considering looking at an area that is on our ancestral lands or on our treaty lands or near our reservation or on our reservation, that they sit down and consult with us and give us an opportunity to demonstrate and show where their sacred sites. We've been asking them not to go this way. Ever since we learned about this, we said, stop. It seems like the company out of Dallas,
yeah,
and the Corps of Engineers, the federal government, does not listen.
No, they don't. No, well, actually, I think they do listen. I think that the company out of Dallas and the Corps of Engineers, I think they do listen. And I think they did hear that these were sacred lands. And that's why they went in the next day. Security officers that were hired by the pipeline's owner, Energy Transfer Partners, confronted the protesters with dogs and pepper spray. There was injuries reported on both sides. Some security personnel and dogs suffered minor injuries. Several protesters reporting injuries from dog bites, including a child and a pregnant woman, and dozens were sprayed with pepper spray. And so they went to court, and Desi Doyen, I know you spoke with the with Earth Justice, the attorneys who are basically handling this suit, as the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe is in D.C. trying to get them to stop this construction. I know you spoke with the attorneys yesterday because they went to court for emergency relief after this happened over the weekend, and the verdict was kind of misreported in several different places that I saw. So can you give us the definitive word on their attempt to get this restraining order from the federal government over the weekend?
Okay, so over the weekend, this temporary restraining order, it was a mixed bag because essentially what we're talking about are three different court actions. First is the major broad lawsuit that mm-hmm. the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe has sued the Army Corps of Engineers, saying that they were not meaningfully consulted over the pipeline route and there are concerns about their water supply, cultural sites, environmental impact. So the tribe then has filed an injunction to request that construction stop while they're waiting for their suit against the Army Corps of Engineers to continue. So at that hearing that they had last week on requesting this injunction, they were told by the energy company told the judge, mm-hmm. hey, you know, we don't have any documentation on all of this. They haven't proven any of these sites. So
they
haven't
proven that these are sacred sites.
Right. These sites are on private
right.
land. They did not have permission to go on the private land. That's when the private landowner gave them access and said, yes, come look, let's see. That's when they found the new cultural site. So on Friday, that's when they put in that evidence to say, hey, see, we found the evidence you asked for. Here it is. That essentially looks like it was taken as a roadmap by the energy company on Saturday to bulldoze those exact sacred areas. That was when on Sunday the tribe went back to get the temporary restraining order to stop that construction. So yesterday the judge did hear an emergency hearing for that mm-hmm. temporary restraining order. At that time he said, no, I won't stop construction because it's on private land and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, I believe, does not have jurisdiction over private land. However, we'll go ahead and stop construction for now, temporary restraining order, on this other area that you have already asked about.
That the U.S. Corps of Engineers does have
exactly.
Control
However,
over.
There haven't really been any sacred artifacts found on that particular site, the other site that the judge said, yes, you can stop there. That's where we are now, is that it was a mixed bag ruling. They did not get protection for the sacred sites that they just found and documented. They did, however, stop construction on a different portion.
Once they got access to that private land, they found almost immediately the evidence that they were looking for
these
sacred sites,
burial rocks,
and so forth.
Yeah, they found signs of burial sites, cairns,
yeah.
Some jewelry. They found some items that they said was actually a significant cultural find. It's all gone now.
Another element that I want to get to on this here, because the U.S. Corps of Engineers, as David Archambault told us last week, they were the ones essentially who gave the approval on behalf of the federal government and allowed the pipeline construction to begin. But according to, Inside Climate News, senior officials at the U.S. EPA, the Environmental Protection Agencies, and two other federal agencies had raised serious environmental and safety concerns to the North Dakota section of the controversial Dakota Access Oil Pipeline, which is a huge pipeline, by the way. It's set to ship about half a million barrels of crude per day from North Dakota down to southern Illinois. So the EPA and two other federal agencies had expressed their objections to the Army Corps of Engineers in public letters and so forth during the comment period. But those concerns were dismissed by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which Inside Climate News said relied on environmental assessment reports prepared by the pipeline's developer. Dakota Access LLC.
So the pipeline company said, hey, we'll do the environmental assessment. Look, it's great. There's no problem at all.
Right. And that's what the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers relied on. In the meantime, the EPA, the Department of the Interior, and the Advisory Council on Historic Preservation echoed the concerns about the pipeline that the tribes had. In public comments on the Army Corps' draft environmental assessments, they cited risks to water supplies, inadequate emergency preparedness, potential impacts to the Standing Rock Reservation, and insufficient environmental justice analysis. The agencies urged the Army Corps to issue a revised draft of their environmental assessment. Basically, everything that David Archambault had said last week, right after they got out of their initial court hearing on Wednesday before this emergency, the other parts of the federal government had agreed with him.
Yes.
And it was only the Army Corps of Engineers who said, oh, never mind that. Let's rely on the operators of this pipeline and their environmental assessment. And those are the same folks who found out about this sacred sites on Friday and on Saturday started breaking ground, knowing that the judge, I believe, hasn't the judge already said, well, I'm not going to stop the construction if the ground has already been broken?
As I understand it. Okay. So as I understand it, that they will not stop construction on areas of land that has already been disturbed. So going in and disturbing that land and destroying that evidence, you know, that seems to me to be highly suspect, if not downright illegal. It's my understanding as well that under federal law, as soon as Native American cultural artifacts are found, that construction should have stopped right there.
But it didn't.
But it did not. So there's some question about why the U.S. Department of Justice is not yet involved in finding out why this is happening. Where are they?
Where is the DOJ? What's going on? Now, there were more arrests today in these protests. This is now finally beginning to get a lot more attention in the corporate media.
Right. And it's been reported that Jill Stein, the Green Party presidential candidate, has been arrested.
Yeah.
She hasn't actually been arrested. A warrant for her arrest has been sworn out for her to be arrested, but she has not physically been taken in. That's because she was at the protests over the weekend and she spray painted.
She vandalized.
Yeah. She spray painted, I approve this message on one of those bulldozers.
One of the bulldozers.
So that's considered vandalism. So they're going to try to get her on that.
So you got to wonder what the hell is going on here. And with all of these other federal agencies, and I'm running late, so I don't have time to go through, you know, all of this. But they found environmental concerns. The Antiquities Agency, found that there were most likely sacred grounds here. And they advised against using this this route for the pipeline, which was the same thing the tribes were saying. And they were saying, hey, why don't you run it down by Bismarck? Oh, well, because there's people, it could affect their water supply. There's, you guys, there's not as many of
there's,
you Native
there's
Americans.
There's not as many people here will be impacted by your water supply being poisoned. So it's okay.
Yep. Now, where
says
are
the Corps of Engineers.
Says the Corps of Engineers, and that's where we are. And now on Friday, with all of this action going on Friday, and I know that there are actually protests out here. I think the security firm has a branch out here in Los Angeles where there are objections going forward, protests going forward today. So we may have more on that later this week.
On Friday, the federal judge said he will rule by the end of the day on Friday on whether to grant their initial injunction saying just stop all this construction until we have our case against the Army Corps heard.
What a mess.
Very much.
What an embarrassment, actually, for this country.
And environmental racism. This is, I think, a big problem. As David Archambault, the chairman of the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe, said multiple times, tribes are the ones that suffer and pay the cost for these national energy initiatives, these national energy projects, because, nobody, let the Native Americans deal with it.
Yeah, he told us that over and over again, and it seems like he's absolutely right. Speaking of national embarrassments, let me take a quick break, and we'll come back with our reverse broadcast. You can give us a call on any of these topics or anything that you think I need to know about. that I haven't discussed that I need to know about. And of course, I will tell you why you're completely wrong about it. Our phone number is 818-985-5735. If you're in the Southern California listening area, 818-985-KPFK. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back with your calls and more. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is your Bradcast.
Hold on to me as we go, as we roll down this unfamiliar road. And although this wave is stringing us along, just know you're not alone. 'Cause I'm gonna make this place your home.
This is your home. This is the Bradcast. Thank you for joining me. I'm Brad Friedman. We are live today at the KPFK Pacifica Radio Studios, and I would love to hear from you. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. 818-985-KPFK. As we had 2 months. 2 months from Election Day, almost exactly today. And what do I need to know? What do I not know that I need to know? And then I'll tell you why you're wrong about it. 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Let's hit some phones here. Bill in Lake Elsinore. Hey, Bill, welcome to the Bradcast.
Thank you, Brad.
Thank you, sir.
Over a year ago, you predicted this may happen with the Donald Trump phenomenon.
Thank you for noticing, yes.
I was so hoping you were wrong. Something told me you weren't.
Me too.
I wouldn't refer to this as an election. I would call it an auction.
Yeah.
And does the votes in the battleground, quote unquote battleground state, mm-hmm. and the Electoral College make up all the difference anyways?
The votes in the battleground states, say that again?
Okay, votes in the battleground states,
yeah,
count for 5 votes in the popular vote states, correct?
I see what you're saying. Well, no, not really, of course, but what you're saying is because those are the close ones, those are the states that are going to determine the presidential election, that they have more value than votes cast elsewhere, at least in the presidential race. Is that sort of what you're getting at?
Correct, absolutely. Yeah. And the Electoral College
mm-hmm.
makes up the rest of the difference. So we're being at a disadvantage in populated states over the battleground states.
One thing that drives me crazy about elections is that so many people focus only on the presidential race. Now, you called it, what'd you call it, an auction?
Auction. Yeah,
you know, and normally that is the case. That has become the case, certainly since Citizens United back in, 2010, basically the one with the most money wins. At this point, because you've got this freakazoid in Donald Trump, all bets are off as far as money, as far as buying one's way into at least the White House. All of the other races, however, that's still the case. It's still a money race, and it's still obscene the amount of money that is spent. But what drives me a little bit nuts is that there are so many voters who think only about the presidential race. They don't look at the state races, the federal races for Congress, for the U.S. Senate and the House, and then the state races, and then the local races, and then the ballot initiatives. You know, out here in California, we've got two competing, we may talk about this in more detail soon, but we've got two competing ballot initiatives concerning the death penalty. One will do away with it. The other will start killing people a whole lot faster here in California. These things matter, and every vote in those cases, I believe, matters. So, you know, I get a little irritated when I hear people, and I know you didn't say this, Bill, but when I hear people saying, oh, voting doesn't matter, elections don't matter, like hell it doesn't. No matter where you live. At least that's my opinion. Am I wrong?
Awesome, Brad. Thank you very much.
Good to hear from you, Bill. Thanks for touching base. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. 818-985-KPFK. Anything that's on your mind, it is a reverse Bradcast. Tell me what I need to know, and I'll tell you why you're totally wrong about it. Let's go to Morris in Long Beach. Hey, Morris, welcome to the Bradcast.
Hey, how you doing, Brad? Listen, I just got through reading Uncle Norm's book, Noam Chomsky, Masters of Mankind.
Mm-hmm.
And he says that the Clintons have a great name for business, that business really appreciated the name Clintons. And, of course, now Mr. Trump, he's got a problem. He's offended the entire Arab and Muslim world. And the Clintons, they kind of know where the bodies are buried, according to Pastor Rob of the SEIU. And you know another problem we got, Brad? Remember your boy Alexander Hamilton and their fear of the mob rule, that democracy just might take hold, that if the folks did have their voice respected, that they might affect the distribution of wealth? Do you think we still have that problem to this date? I'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, Morris. I do. Well, you know, I think that the voices of the people are heard. The problem is not enough voices participate in the process. I mean, you know, even in an election year, we've got anywhere from even in a presidential election year, we've got anywhere from 60 to 80 percent of the registered voters actually bother to show up. And that's in a big year. That's in a presidential election year. And you still have, you know, 20% of the people who are already registered who don't even bother to show up in the big turnout states. Other states are, like I say, around 60%. And those numbers are much, much less in off-year elections, in local elections, in state elections. So, you know, people say, oh, we don't have a real democracy in this country. Well, of course, we don't have direct democracy. We have a representative democracy. But even in that representative democracy, people don't participate. Now, a lot of politicians I hear, and I hear a lot of Democrats doing this, a lot of Democrats blame the voters. They blame the voters for not bothering to show up. I don't blame the voters. I actually blame the politicians. I blame the politicians for not giving the voters something to vote for allowing them to think, and in a case like Donald Trump versus Hillary Clinton, allowing them to think, oh, they're both the same. They're both the same side, different sides of the same coin. I disagree. Now, I don't care who you vote for. Vote for whoever you want. I say this over and over again. I know that out here in California, we got a lot of third party supporters. Gary Johnson, Libertarian Party, Jill Stein, the jailbird, Jill Stein. Does he do it? Not yet. Okay, she hasn't been arrested yet. You know, supporters of that. And in states like California, you can have some comfort, I guess, that you can vote third party and it's not going to give the White House to a Donald Trump. Yes, I think Donald Trump is above and beyond anything or anybody we've ever seen running for the White House. And I would be very concerned about that, no matter what you think of Hillary Clinton, no matter what I think of Hillary Clinton. 818-985-5735 is our phone number. 818-985-KPFK. Anything you want to talk about. And, you know, when it comes to turnout, so Democrats are out there basically blaming voters for not voting year after year. And it is true, they don't vote enough, but I would argue that the politicians need to give them a reason to vote. At the same time, on the Republican side, they continue to try to keep people from voting. They don't want you to vote, and they're going to extraordinary means once again this year to do that. Now, we've got some good news out of the courts. And I think this happened, when was this, late last week. Basically, the Supreme Court denied North Carolina's attempt to hold off this injunction on their terrible law that has been described as the worst voter suppression law since the Jim Crow era. This was an appellate court had found this horrible law in pretty much in every measure. Which was restricting early voting, reducing the amount of time of early voting, eliminating same-day registration, eliminating out-of-precinct provisional voting so that if you showed up to vote at the wrong precinct, you would not have your ballot would not be counted, even though you cast a provisional ballot. And of course, and they did away with pre-registration, allowing 16 and 17 year olds to register to vote so that when they became 18, they would be able to vote. They wouldn't have to then run out and register to vote. And of course, these photo ID voting restrictions. Now, the appellate court looked at it And found that that the state of North Carolina had specifically targeted African Americans with, quote, surgical, where does it, near surgical precision. They were specifically, they had asked for how do African Americans vote here in North Carolina, and when they found that they disproportionately used early voting and same-day registration and didn't have the type of photo ID that was required by North Carolina, as soon as the Republicans who now run North Carolina found that out, they put restrictions on all of these things. The appellate court struck that down. North Carolina went to the Supreme Court, and in a 4-4 tie decision late last week, they couldn't agree. Therefore, the appellate court ruling stands. The appellate court ruling, which struck down this law. That's the good news for now in North Carolina, where the governor, Pat McCrory, the Republican governor, he's actually in a very close race this year for re-election against the attorney general, who has refused to defend this law, Attorney General Roy Cooper. So McCrory, in his statement after the Supreme Court failed to restore this restrictive law, put out a statement blaming the four liberal justices on the Supreme Court. And here's the actual statement that McCrory put out. North Carolina has been denied basic voting rights already granted to more than 30 other states to protect the integrity of one person, one vote through our common sense voter ID law. So basically, he is arguing that it is North Carolina, the state of North Carolina, that has been denied its basic voting rights. Never mind the voters, it's the state that has somehow this imaginary right to vote by the state, actually right to keep people from voting in North Carolina. McCrory went on to say in his statement, even without any support from our state's attorney general, we were pleased that four justices, including Chief Justice John Roberts, agreed with this right, while this right to keep people from voting. That's how they're framing this. Agreed with this right, while four liberal justices blocked North Carolina protections afforded by our sensible voter laws. That's something else that matters in this presidential election. The Supreme Court, which right now was split 4-4. If Donald Trump wins, he'll put someone like Antonin Scalia back on the courts, and boom. Millions, the voting rights for millions of Americans goes down the drain. By the way, Ernie Canning, our legal analyst over at bradblog.com, notes states don't have a right to vote. Only people do. What McCrory is complaining about is a denial of a right of a GOP-controlled state to suppress the voting rights of classes of people. 818-985-5735. Oh, shoot. Okay, let me get to a quick break, and we'll come back. I went on and on. Sorry, I'll come back to your calls. 818-985-5735. I'm Brad Friedman. This is your Bradcast.
Say it's only a paper moon, sailing over a cardboard sea. But it wouldn't be make-believe if you believed in me.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. We haven't heard that one for a while. Thank you for that, Desi Doyen. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman, bradblog.com. Our phone number is 818-985-5735 if you'd like to get in on the conversation today. Mark in Thousand Oaks, welcome to the Bradcast. What is on your mind, sir? Do I have Mark? Did we lose Mark? There we go.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark. Okay, we got you.
Yeah, sorry.
The censorship is over. You're in. What's up?
Yeah, this is the fifth time I've called on the Burn Your Bust movement.
That you've called me?
Yes, and I was calling ever since before it was a thing. It was in the New York primaries when I started because I was nervous as heck that Trump might actually get considered. Well, when you look at the Gary Johnson numbers, they're saying 50% right now are coming from Bernie-leaning supporters.
Mm-hmm.
And my only message right now, again, is the same. I wouldn't use the word ridiculous, as Sarah Silverman said. But if you're voting in a swing state for someone like Jill Stein or Johnson, mm-hmm. and Trump wins, it is no question that you will have the same accountability as someone who votes for Trump. I mean, it's proven with Nader. He got all the votes, in something like 700,000 votes in Florida. So all those people who thought, well, I got to vote by conscience, I'll vote for Nader. Well, Bush gets in, starts a bunch of wars. You cannot deny the fact, in a, you know, that if you vote for Stein or Johnson, who, Johnson just happens to be the exact opposite of everything Bernie stood for. So I kind of disagree. I think the voters have to be, they can't be in denial to say, I'm going to vote my conscience and then vote for someone like Johnson. Not if you're a Bernie supporter, because he's basically is the opposite of everything Bernie was.
So you're saying, just so I understand what you're trying to say, Mark, you say you disagree. You disagree with what? The idea that...
Well, your assertion that, you know, it's okay to vote your conscience in a swing state and kind of take your chances. I don't think it's that easy. I think there has to be an assertion to, for people who are Bernie voters to realize they would be equally responsible if Trump wins of casting a Trump vote. And it would be the same.
And I agree with you, Mark, actually. So either I misspoke or you misheard.
No, I think in the past, I may be apologizing here, but I've always got this assumption when you say it's fine to vote your conscience. I kind of disagree with that principle that, you know, in the swing states, it's not okay to vote your conscience.
Well,
I think
no.
You really need to, you've got a binary choice. I mean, mathematically, they can show that if you have two candidates who cannot win and you vote for one of those candidates, you are actually voting for the other. So,
Mark, I think we are of the same mind here. And if I misspoke and said in swing states that that it doesn't matter. I was saying that, you know, it's one thing if you're in a blue state, a California state or even a red state. And if you want to vote for a third party. Now, I will never tell anyone that it was not OK to vote your conscience. But I think you need an informed conscience. You need to know what will happen, what the value of your vote is. And yes, as you point out, Mark, exactly what will happen, if you vote for a Gary Johnson or a Jill Stein in a swing state, and that ends up throwing the race to Donald Trump, and that ends up throwing the White House to Donald Trump. I think it's okay. I'm never going to tell someone you can't vote your conscience, but you need to be aware of what the effect of your vote is. And I think people are woefully, woefully misinformed when they say there's no difference between Trump and Clinton.
You know, then maybe I was a little off, because the way you just phrased it there, I would totally agree with you. But I do think a lot of the people are misinformed. I don't know the reason why Johnson has 50% of his supporters Bernie leaning, because it just makes no sense to me. Jill Stein I get in a way, but Johnson doesn't make any sense if you're a Bernie supporter.
I hear you, Mark, and
all right. And
I accept.
Well, I appreciate the you hearing me out, then.
And I accept your apology. Thanks,
Mark. Right,
thanks, Mark. I appreciate the call. Sora, we got a few minutes here. Let me. Soren wants to get in Long Beach, also on Bernie or Bust. Hey, Soren, welcome to the broadcast.
Hey, Brad. Thank you for all you do.
Thanks, sir.
Just jumping off the last caller there. I only have this to say. You're so good about election reporting, election fraud over the years, etc. I would like to respectfully suggest that maybe you look into some way to counter the narrative. I think it's a total urban myth that Nader voters cost the Bush regime to be installed.
I agree.
The numbers don't square up like that in Florida. When you look at the caging lists, you know, I know you're familiar with Greg Powell's reporting. I just want to see that urban legend, you know, beat back any time. I mean, we can have disagreements, you know, good people can be like, oh, you know, vote your conscience at all times, or, you know, hey, lesser two evil, this or that. People got to do what they got to do, swing state or otherwise. But I just want to see a smart guy with a platform like you counter that narrative. Nader voters did not cause the shenanigans that Kathleen Harris and the Bush administration and the Supreme Court, they installed Bush despite
yes.
the Nader vote.
No, exactly. No, listen, Soren, I've spoken about that for years, and it was not Ralph Nader that put George W. Bush in the White House. It was the Supreme Court that put George W. Bush in the White House. So, nonetheless, pay attention when you're voting what the effect of your vote could or couldn't be. In Florida, it turned out to be the Supreme Court, but it could have been the third party candidate in any event. Oh, shoot. I got to get out. And do I got to get out already? Yeah, I guess I got to get out already. Thanks, G. All right. Thanks to all of you. Sorry I couldn't get to everybody on the line. And Gary wanted to talk about Nader, too. It's G's fault. G is our soundboard operator. I thank her anyway, and I thank Desi Doyen, our producer, and I thank you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it for free anytime at bradblog.com, over at iTunes, over at kpfk.org, or wherever. We'll be back with you same Brad time, same Brad channel tomorrow. Until then, you can find me on the Twitters. I'm the Brad Blog, and you can drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. Until we meet again, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.